forget frequently asked questions.
Common sense, common knowledge, or Google.
How about advice from a real genius? 95% of people in any profession are good enough to be qualified and licensed. 5%
go above and beyond.
They become very good at what they do, but only
0.1%.
are real geniuses. Richard Jacobs has made it his life's mission to find them for you. He hunts down and interviews geniuses in every field. Sleep science, cancer, stem cells, ketogenic diets, and more. Here come the geniuses. This is the Finding Genius Podcast
with Richard Jacobs.
Hello, this is Richard Jacobs with the Finding Genius Podcast, now part of the Finding Genius Foundation. My guest today is Matt Connolly. We're going to talk about living with schizophrenia and the stigma surrounding the condition, of which there is a tremendous amount. So welcome, Matt. Thanks for coming.
You bet. Yeah, thanks for having me. Happy to be on and to share, and looking forward to it.
Yeah, if you would, tell me a bit about your background and how did you have to get introduced into the concept of schizophrenia, or how did you and this condition intersect?
Well, when I was 18, 19 years old, left high school and went to college is when I started to, I was probably doing too many drugs and probably drinking too much, and that probably had something to do with it, but there's no proof of that. Lately, I've been hearing maybe it was smoking too much weed might have caused schizophrenia, but yeah, it was around that time I started to have symptoms and then suffered for like 10 years.
Oh, man. What happened? Like, did you know that things were changing, or, you know, did you have to speak to people that you knew when they were telling you, hey, Matt, you know, you said this or did that, and it really bothered me? You know, like, how did this start coming to your awareness?
Good question, but it never came until 10 years later. I never saw a doctor, mental illness. Just, you know, this was 2003 when I finally got diagnosed and got help, but no one had thought that maybe Matt has some mental illness. He needs to see a doctor or a therapist or whatever. Mental illness just wasn't talked about as near as much as it is today, thank goodness.
Well, what was it like with family, friends, et cetera, classmates? Did anyone say stuff to you and you thought, you're wrong, I'm fine? Or like, no one's anything?
So I basically lost touch with, well, reality for sure. But, you know, friends, family, classmates, couldn't hold down a job. Yeah, like I was living on the streets some. It was it was not good. Yeah.
But what happened? Like, you'd work at a job, what would happen? There'd be a misunderstanding, or would you act out? Like, what would cause friction in your various relationships?
Yeah. Well, you know, I was so far gone that school was not, I couldn't concentrate on doing any schoolwork for sure. And then I went to San Diego. My uncle offered me a job out there, left Iowa. And, you know, he was nice enough to let me keep my job for as long as he did, maybe 2 or 3 years or 2 years, as I recall, but I really shouldn't have kept it that long. Like, I wasn't showing up on time. I was still smoking weed a bunch. And I don't know if that was masking the symptoms or helping the symptoms. I can't figure that out. But, and then, you know, I went back to try to figure out life in Des Moines again after college in San Diego, and that didn't work out, and couldn't reconnect with family or friends really from high school or old girlfriend or anything. And so then I went kind of traveling around the country a little bit to a few different spots, chased this girl down to Memphis, and then went from there to Georgia, Atlanta, and just, you know, I'd have a job and I couldn't perform. Like, my mind was living in La La Land.
Well, no. What do you mean? Like, what's an example of a job you had?
Yeah, so when I was in Atlanta,
I just can't do this. Like, what happened?
So when I was in Atlanta, and I had all the tools. Like, when I left Des Moines, I was like, okay, I can go be a drywaller. Like, I have all the tools. Like, I can do this. You know, and my dad probably helped me buy some tools and whatnot. And I had a bucket. I had a T-square. I was ready to rock. Well, drywalling is hard. If you can't think straight, it is not easy. And it's not easy anyway. But anyway, I failed in the first 2 days. I told these guys I could do it. Yeah, I can do it. You know, you just got to kind of, that's what I was coached up to tell these guys. Yeah, you got it. you know, I'll figure it out. I can do it. And I couldn't figure out anything. I couldn't figure out nothing. And then I'll tell you another story. So I was a union plumber for a while, for a short while. And cool job, right? Working on cool downtown buildings and whatnot. And this is how my mind was working. So I had a journeyman that I followed around and he helped me out that I probably frustrated the hell out of. But I used to think that he would, when he was really doing good at his job, like humming along, he would be like up in the air a little bit and do this like Daffy Duck thing that I would hallucinate that he would do. And I thought he was using this red laser out of his eye to like show his pro skills or something. I mean, it was just far out stuff. But, you know, that was, yeah. I thought that was real and it was obviously not. But
yeah, but what, when you saw something like that, like a laser coming out of his eye,
yeah,
did you think, am I seeing things or how is this possible? Like, you saw it, but
right.
Someone would normally say, that doesn't make any sense. How could that be? Like, what did your mind say to you?
Yeah. So the definition of a delusion is, and a hallucination too, really, is a strongly held false belief. So my mind was completely on board with everything that was going on in the non-reality world I was living in. So I didn't know right from wrong, left from right, up from down. Everything that was going on in my head, I was 100% real to me. But, and you know, the other thing I'll say is I didn't talk a lot, probably, especially about what was going on in my head. So not only could I not communicate or conversate that well when I was that sick, I was, you know, I was able to hang out here and there a little bit. But, you know, that's why people didn't probably question my mental illness at the time, because I just didn't have, I wasn't talking about, you know, everything that was going on in my head. So that was...
Well, what's an example of a story, you know, once you got help and you were diagnosed and all that, and then you looked back on what had happened to you, you know, throughout your life, are there any stories of things that happened that now you think, how could I have thought that? What, you know, like are certain things clear to you now that they weren't before? Like, what's an example of something?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. So let's see. And by the way, I did not drink a bunch and do much drugs after college. I was just smoking weed in California, but that was part of the deal. Like, I was so high on whatever my brain was thinking at the time. I didn't need drugs and alcohol much anymore. So I was doing very little of that, but people still thought I was probably doing too much drugs or on alcohol. I know my parents probably did, and they'd see me every so often and think that I was just, I don't know, you know, too much drugs or whatever. But anyhow, so for like the last 6 years, a good 5 or 6 years, it wasn't all that often that I was on drugs and alcohol at all. But one thing that, you know, not to get political or anything, but, you know, this is, I don't know if I should say this, but I'm gonna, I guess.
Right.
So I used to watch Fox News all the time. There was always, not only did I like hallucinate and have like games I was playing with TV anchors on ESPN and stuff too, like and even local news and whatnot. It's just far out how my mind was, I call it playing these games that was going on. But so, for example, for local news, I was listening to this anchor and I went outside and I knew that where part of town the TV show station was. So I thought we were still having this conversation that we were having in front of the TV, but also out in the front yard talking like through the clouds. So that's one obvious far out there delusion that I was having. But what I was going to say is, so Fox News, you know, good looking women on there all the time. I was like, okay, you know, I didn't have any political preference either way. I didn't know any better of anything. But I would say that because I watched Fox News, because of the hot women on there, that this sucks to say, but two things that have completely changed ever since immediately when I got healthy was I hated Mexicans when I was sick, and it's probably because of Fox News. And I don't know that for sure, but for some reason and it wasn't like I didn't hate or too bad or anything. I just didn't like Mexicans for some reason. And the second thing was, you know, I wasn't comfortable with gay people. I would say I didn't hate them or anything, I don't think, but now I love Mexican people and I love the gay people. I love everybody. You know, everybody's got something, I figure. I mean,
yes, I guess your mind was maybe more open to suggestion than others as you were in that state. Yeah. So I guess that's why.
I think that's right. So, yeah, I think it's as odd as that may be or sound, I think that is probably accurate.
Before we continue, I've been personally funding the Finding Genius podcast for 4.5 years now, which has led to 2,700 plus interviews of clinicians, researchers, scientists, CEOs, and other amazing people who are working to advance science and improve our lives and our world. Even though this podcast gets 100,000 plus downloads a month, we need your help to reach hundreds of thousands more worldwide. Please visit findinggeniuspodcast.com and click on Support Us. We have 3 levels of membership from $10 to $49 a month, including perks such as the ability to see ahead in our interview calendar and ask questions of upcoming guests, transcripts of podcasts you're interested in, the ability to request specific topics or guests, and more. Visit findinggeniuspodcast.com and click Support Us today. Now back to the show.
Do you think that's common? You know, if someone has schizophrenia and their friend says, hey, let's smoke crack or let's break into the store or whatever it is, that they're more likely to do it. Are they more open to the power of suggestion, would you say? Were you?
I don't think so. I don't think that. I didn't get talked into doing too much stuff, really. I was, you know, I think part of it is, even though I really didn't know what the hell was going on at all, I think part of it is, you know, I don't think so. I don't think that. Yeah.
Well, what happened around the time? Like, how did you get diagnosed? What was going on that led to you to speak to somebody to get a diagnosis? Let's talk about that part.
Okay. Well, that is, I'll talk a little bit about it. It's not something I'm proud of, but none of it is good. When I was sick, I was, you know.
Yeah, I just want to let you know you're incredibly brave for coming on here and talking about this at all. So don't worry.
Yeah.
Thank you.
And I appreciate you're welcome.
Come on.
It's
scary stuff, but thank you.
Yeah. So it was scary being me, but it was scary being around me too. I mean, you know, I probably smiled very, very rarely. You know, and I don't know if you've been around people that are sick like I was, but, you know.
My uncle was, but he was older and he was really, really far gone. So he was really like a caricature of a person, unfortunately. But he was, again, when I knew him, he was like in his 70s, you know, and onwards. But, you know, I think it's a different situation than a younger person, you know?
Sure. Yeah. So I got in trouble with the law and I basically just scared the hell out of some people. Somebody thought I had a gun. I did not have a gun. Thankfully, I'd never had guns. Still never. But just spooked the heck out of some people. Cops were alerted. I ended up getting a commitment from there, from some family that kind of started seeing some me like having a psychotic break, I guess, is maybe what happened. So I think my uncle bailed me out of jail. I think that I got a commitment right after that. And then I got hospitalized.
They evaluated you and committed you?
I think my aunt and my mom committed me.
Okay.
So he asked. Yeah, my uncle got me out of there and out of jail and let me hang in his basement. But I wasn't there long until I got committed. And it was a few different things that got me in trouble. Everybody started, you know, thinking, man, something's up. Serious with Matt. And then 2 weeks in the hospital, an inpatient, is when I first got diagnosed, first ever saw a doctor. The first hospital I went to said that I was too sick for them. They just didn't quite have the behavioral health department that they do today. So they shipped me to another special, you know, good hospital with good behavioral health department. And that's where I was diagnosed schizophrenia, started gaining a bunch of weight because of the meds. And then had all this kind of heavy legal trouble hanging over my head, but came back to Des Moines. My parents were like, man, thankfully something was wrong with you. We didn't know. They were relieved that it was actually a illness. They didn't know what the hell was going on.
Well, what about your perception? How did you feel? Did you think you were okay and your family was betraying you? Or like, how did you feel?
I'm getting there. So I didn't know what was going on yet. It took me about a month, I would say, in outpatient therapy, group therapy, that after I came home from the hospital that I again, saw somebody in our group doing flips up in the ceiling, in the corner of the ceiling. And that was the first time that I questioned a delusion. And I said to myself, I'll bet that guy's not doing backflips up in the ceiling. And that is when my mind started turning the right direction, finally. And the medicine started to work. And the therapy was starting to work. And appointments.
Well, quick question here. So when you started taking medicine, did you still have hallucinations or delusions? Or I guess they turned from delusions more to hallucinations.
No, they were both. I had a lot of both all the time, every day, all day.
But how did the medicine affect you? Like, you would still see stuff, but you'd at least say that's probably not real? Or like, what changed when you took the medicine?
The medicine just didn't kick in for a good few weeks. So nothing really changed other than I was just going through the motions with being, you know, living in my parents' basement. I had a roof over my head, which was great, and started having all these appointments to go to, which gave me some purpose and direction and something, you know. And then, you know, I got online for the first time, researched my diagnosis after I had that outpatient kind of aha moment. And I'm like looking up, I think I found NAMI at the time. And when I Googled something and Googled schizophrenia, and they're like, not disorganized thinking, hallucinations, delusions. And sure enough, I'm like, yeah, I think they got the diagnosis right. But it took me all of 6 months to get healthy from that hospitalization. And then I was the only symptom I had then for another 6 months to a year or so was some olfactory hallucinations, which I don't know if you're familiar with that, but that you would smell something that's not there. Usually it was a bad smell. You know, so I'm in my office now, and if it was back then, maybe I could smell like dog crap or puke or gross.
How strong were those hallucinations, the olfactory ones? Were they like overpoweringly strong?
Yeah, so they were, and your mind would just go, you know, out there on why you were smelling and where is it coming from and all this stuff. Like it would just, again, go out in a distant place trying to, your mind would try to make sense of it, I guess, and there is no sense to be made of it. So
what happened when the medication started affecting you and started working? What changed?
Well, I could think clearly. You know, I could put thoughts together. I had feelings. I could rationalize right and wrong and direction, and you know, everything started coming back to me. I was on the honor roll before all this went down in high school, and varsity wrestler, and had a lot of friends, president of the school. I mean, I was rocking up until I hit college. And then some of that started coming back, I guess.
So from the time you started having problems till you got, you know, the medication started working, did it get worse over time? Like, what was it like to deal with this, say, after 1 year versus after, you know, 10 years, so however long you dealt with it?
Yeah, so it was bad all the time, but it progressively probably got worse. Like in college, the hallucinations and delusions weren't as 24/7 maybe. And then in California, they were a lot more often, in Memphis and Atlanta and Des Moines, they were all day, every day.
Oh, wow. Would you lose track of days and time while this was happening all the time? Like what was your perception of time?
I don't know. That's a good question. I don't know. I don't remember that really. I know, I think 9/11 happened when I was sick, and yeah, it did. That was 2001, right? So yeah, I don't remember too many dates of anything else. I don't remember time too much other than some.
Were you able to form new memories of that time, or is it kind of wiped out?
Oh, no, I remember some of it. Yeah. Some of it's wiped out, but some of it I remember. I don't have that good memory anyway, really, but yeah, I remember some. So I give talks on this story of mine all the time, and so I remember it that way. You know, public speaking-wise, I usually tell the same story like I am now. I usually use a note cards and don't have a question and answer. I appreciate this better. It feels like it's a little more fun to kind of wing it and just kind of saying a lot of the same stuff, but a little different.
Right. Sure. So when did you start interacting with other people? You said you went to NAMI. I guess that's the National Association for Mental Illness.
National Alliance on Mental Illness. Yep. So NAMI was, I started just advocating, you know, getting involved, which I've always said, you know, the past is the past. I can't change it. I mean, like, I was a sick person, real sick person. It is what it is. So, or it was what it was. If I try to forget it or put it under the rug or whatever, it'll just come rear its ugly head later. So I've always thought just being an advocate, you know, spreading the message that of hope and believe in recovery. Recovery is possible. You know, I've been symptom free for almost 20 years, and a lot of it is just because I don't forget about it. I mean, I don't go bragging about it or anything, but you know, I've been an advocate with NAMI since the early days of recovery. I was helping with their state walk, and then I ended up running the walk for a few years, and then it was on their state board, and then it was on NAMI Greater Des Moines board, and been helping them raise money for a lot of years, walk.
Well, and I mean, what was it like when you, I'm sure you've interacted with other people that have schizophrenia or other mental conditions. What's that like when you speak to someone else that has schizophrenia? Do you understand each other more, or is it still, I mean, because of the nature of the condition, is it still alienated and isolating? Like, what is it like?
Well, I can say that I just recently had an encounter with some friends of mine that have a nephew that's my age, a good friend of the family, that had, you know, he'd been, his uncle, a friend of my dad's and friend of mine, called me a month or two ago and said, hey, my nephew is sick. I don't understand mental illness. I don't know what to do. And so we talked through it a few times. And then the nephew actually came to town and they called me, I think it was last week. And they're like, hey, what are you doing? I'm like, well, I just had an appointment canceled. They're like, can you come over? I'm like, sure. They're like, Lance is in town. We, you know, want you to help us talk to him. So, sorry, I shouldn't have said names maybe. But anyhow, he ended up, you know, thinking that we had, him and I were be able to talk to each other through mental telepathy or something. He was stumbling over what to call it, but something like that. And he was talking about the FBI bugging his house or room and all this. And, you know, it was just the first time that I had been around somebody that was super sick like I was, that was completely out there. Like he was super sick. And it sucks. I don't know. We've tried to help him. I think that he's on track in the hospital right now. But yeah, I mean, that was hard, you know, just because I didn't know, you know, I want to just be like, man, you're sick. And we asked him, have you seen a doctor? Or, you know, he's like, no, I don't have any mental illness. Because I told him my story a little bit, and he's like, no, I don't have anything like that. And I was like, would you at least go see a therapist? Therapist's fun, man. He's a perfectly good stranger. You just go talk things out, you know, tell him anything you want, confidential. He's like, yeah, I'll do that. Well, anyhow. Yeah, that's otherwise, no, I, you know, schizophrenia is not as, well, common as, you know, depression, anxiety, OCD, there's all the other, there's a bunch of them, obviously, right? But, you know, and you just don't see it on people as much either, unless, you know, people talk about it, but not, I don't know, I just don't see people in the throes of their illness, I say.
Well, I figured in NAMI meetings that you would be in, I don't know if they're like AA meetings, is it good group therapy? Do people get together in a group and talk about what's going on with them?
Or there are peer groups that I never really participated in. For a short time, maybe I did, but no, I mean, NAMI is just a bunch of advocates. And let me be clear, our local chapter of NAMI is now, we've changed names to MindSpring Mental Health Alliance, which I volunteer as president of, and we just outgrew NAMI, love NAMI. They did a lot of great things for us, but we've just spread our wings. And yeah, NAMI and MindSpring are just, you know, a bunch of advocates trying to reduce stigma and allow people the opportunity to talk more about it or help other people. Or there's not a whole lot of, there's people with lived mental illness experience as advocates, or at least they can relate on some level, or they have a loved one that has been sick or is sick. But there's, it's not like a whole lot of support group type stuff. There's support groups for families, there's support groups for parents of different ages. There's support groups, like I said, peers, and there's, you know, what I'm mostly involved in right now, our big push is mental health in the workplace.
So we're beating the stigma there and getting more people interested in what we offer at MindSpring through our webinars and in-person webinars.
So I've heard that people that have schizophrenia, sometimes they don't want to take their medication and then they'll, you know, have episode. Has that happened to you, or is that at all no more likely to stop taking the medication?
So there was once when I was working out all the time. I was all ripped up. I was eating real healthy. This was like 2013, so 10 years of being healthy. And I had a wife and two small kids at this time. And I thought, you know what? I'm going to try to beat this without the meds and just try it. You know, I thought maybe there's a way that, you know, I don't need the meds. And, you know, my wife was, I didn't tell her that I was doing that. And I didn't tell anybody I was doing that, but soon found out, well, not soon, but it took months before I just about relapsed and fell off the deep end. So I was able to hang in there for a little while. My behavior started to change a little bit. And then my wife checked my pill box. It was from a long time ago. And, you know, my parents got involved and I was like, oh, I'm not, I was just, it was all too much, and things were starting to change. Like one thing they said, the doctor had always said, he's like, if you're going to relapse, you might get like mouth sores or your eyes might get blurry or something. Your eyesight might get blurry or something. And so I felt like that was coming on, whether it was in my head or not. I felt like that was maybe coming on one morning and I went to work and I turned right back around and I started taking medicine right after it all kind of came to a head with my family. And I avoided a relapse by the barely close call. But my wife will tell you I had some behavior changes, and she won't necessarily say I relapsed, but she said there was some definite.
But she was able to notice.
Yeah, not for a while, though. You know, I wish we would have noticed it a little sooner, but I also wish someone would have told me to go see a doctor in my 20s. But
well, did you notice when you stopped the, I mean, you knew obviously what you were doing at first, but did you notice changes?
Looking back on it, yes, I was kind of irritable, and you know, part of it was stressful. You know, I wasn't making as much money then. You know, I was exploring business partnerships, and life was just stressful. So that was not helping the illness laying in the dark or whatever. The illness, you know, hiding in the back of my head that was about ready to come spook me again or whatever. But thankfully, we got back on track.
Well, it just seems like a commonality that, you know, schizophrenia is very difficult because the person experiencing it doesn't know and doesn't think anything's wrong.
Yeah.
So it just seems to be really tough, I guess, in that regard.
Yeah, you're right. You're right. It is. And that was the problem with the guy I was talking about earlier. He had no idea he was sick. I mean, it was obvious. Like, I went into that kind of meeting around the dinner table thinking, you know, or the dining room table, like, how he's got to know, like, how am I going to know that he's sick? And it was he needs to see a doctor when you try to get him to a doctor. Well, it was so obvious he was so far out there the way he was talking. But, yeah, I was able to carry on conversation sometimes otherwise okay, and, you know, gave him a hug. I hadn't seen him for a long time. You know, I don't know. It's just, yeah, it's hard. The medicine thing, you know, for other mental illness, you don't have as good of excuse for not taking your meds. If you're sick and you don't know you're sick and you don't want to take meds, kind of get that, I guess. But man, medicine works, and it works for a lot of things. And I mean, everybody takes a pill for something, it seems like, anyway. So what the hell? You got to take one for what you got, it shouldn't matter.
Maybe for people that are schizophrenics, maybe a good thing to do, I have no idea, would be, you know, once they start getting treatment and help, whether on medication, if they, I don't know, they nominate people around them to tell them, hey, if we see you starting to exhibit these behaviors and all that stuff, we're going to tell you, maybe we even have a code word. We say like the word purple or something. And that's how we tell you, like, hey, you're starting to relapse there. Do you think that would be helpful or tolerated by the person that's suffering, or would it just have no effect?
I think that it would be helpful. I like that idea. I think that's already kind of built in to your support team, if you will, your close sphere of influence. I had like a wellness recovery plan, wellness recovery action plan, a WRAP, and that was one, and I had it when I stopped taking meds 10 years ago, for a short bit. I was just talking about, and my wife knew the guy that I stayed in touch with, that, you know, I've been self-employed for a long, long time, and, you know, haven't been ever, you know, I haven't lived off a trust or family money or anything ever. And I always thought, you know, keeping the social worker close, that was part of my recovery plan when I got diagnosed. And I just always stayed in touch with them, because not that they ever really helped much. They were just there. They helped me write down my goals and stuff. Well, Jody, my wife, knew the guy that I stayed in touch with, but even though it was only once or twice a year or something. His name was Gabe. So Jody went to him, called him, found him, and he knew exactly what to do to kind of help me get on track, help her talk to me to get on track or something. But it helped her anyway, which helped me in turn. So keeping in touch with a social worker, you know, is not, you know, professional recovery plan, I'd say, but having a, and I have lost touch with social workers. I love social workers. They are a godsend, but I have lost touch with the ones that I stayed. You know, your family and your loved ones that you live with and stuff should be able to notice something and be able to say something to you. But it's more important probably for a close friend to say something to you, because your family and your loved ones that you live with see you every day. So they're not, maybe they don't notice, or maybe they can't want to be able to get through you to you as much. But, you know, a friend you see once every week or two or month, you know, might really notice something's up. Or so.
That's what I was going to ask you is, what, you know, for people listening, if they have a family member, friend, whoever, associate that they suspect may have this issue, what's your, you know, how should they approach them? Should they approach them? What would you recommend?
It's a delicate situation. And, you know, if it's a crisis, that's different. You know, there's a mobile crisis team here locally and around the country. They have small, I don't know if there's a small amount of them, or I don't know if you're familiar with the mobile crisis team, but they have like a counselor or social worker or a cop trained in mental health, you know, kind of as a team that can come instead of sending somebody to jail or defuse a situation, you know, a mobile crisis team that's experienced with a mental illness situation is a great, the great tool, if you will, to use. You know, I the thing that I always say is the best, like what I said earlier, and I got Lance to agree to it, is, you know, and you're just having a conversation with people. It's more common all the time where everybody, a lot of people go see a counselor, therapist. Mine, you know, I don't talk symptoms with mine. I don't talk problems much. I talk, you know, I call her my life coach, but I go quarterly, and, you know, we talk about anything, goals and family and all that stuff. So it's fun, is my point, to go talk to somebody that is a perfectly good stranger that you can say anything in confidentiality to. And, you know, they'll recommend to that person if they need to see a doctor for some meds or diagnosis. And they'll be good, you know, to make people aware that maybe they're not talking sense or something. I think it's kind of their job to listen and hopefully give advice on the condition. And maybe somebody will ask, you know, you think I should see a doctor or something, if you're talking to a therapist. Obviously, sometimes therapists are psychologists and they are doctors, but they don't, I think they do testing, but they don't diet. They don't. But anyway, it's getting into the weeds, but a lot of options out there. I think you can talk somebody into first talking to somebody is the route I would go. Okay. Rather than, hey, you need to go see a doctor, or, hey, right, you need to be committed, or, hey, you need to go to, you know, we need to call the cops on you. Know?
Right, yeah. Gotcha.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yes.
All right, Matt. Well, thank you for coming on the podcast. It's, you know, like I said, it's very brave of you, and really appreciate being here, sharing your story. What are resources for people listening that, again, they're having a problem themselves, or again, friend, family, loved one, coworker, they sense or they see that something's happening. You know, what are some resources for them?
So I'm going to brag about mindspringhealth.org. We put on videos, live webinars for free once a day during the week, most every day of the week, on topics, all topics. We'll do one on a Monday about schizophrenia. We'll do one on Tuesday about stress around the holidays. We'll do one on Wednesday about a coworker that's hard to deal with, or, you know, the whole, all of it. We've come up with our own material on a variety of different topics. And we've got a live mental health counselor, licensed therapist, if you will, on the other line doing the webinar. And people can chat online there about it while it's going on. And if you go to the webinar, you can listen to it again later. We've got room for 1,000 people on our Zoom, and we sell out all the time. Like I said, it's for free, but I think that's a great resource for people. It's an educational tool for people with mental illness, people with loved ones with mental illness, people that just want to learn about it and be more aware of mental health awareness. And Mental Health May is coming up. You know, wear a green ribbon and talk to somebody. You know, I like to say that wellness is the cure for overall living well as best you can. And it's the same for anything, to for me not to relapse, and for other people not to get sick. And, you know, the healthy routines of drinking water, drinking plenty of water, getting plenty of sleep, having good balance with work and life and friends and all those things that are good, healthy habits. You know, it's fun to incorporate into everyday lives to stay healthy. Okay. Healthy living is great.
Well, excellent. Well, again, thank you for coming on the podcast, Matt. I appreciate it.
You're welcome. Thank you, sir.
If you like this podcast, please click the link in the description to subscribe and review us on iTunes.
You've been listening to the Finding Genius Podcast with Richard Jacobs. If you like what you hear, be sure to review and subscribe to the Finding Genius Podcast on iTunes or wherever you listen to podcasts. And want to be smarter than everybody else? Become a premium member at FindingGeniusPodcast.com. This podcast is for information only. No advice of any kind is being given. Any action you take or don't take as a result of listening is your sole responsibility. Consult professionals when advice is needed.